Series 3 is kindly supported by Eagle Point Credit Management. Eagle Point Credit Management is a specialist investment manager principally focused on income-oriented credit investments in niche and inefficient markets. Founded by Thomas Majewski in partnership with Stone Point Capital in 2012, Eagle Point currently manages over $7.8 billion in AUM. Investment strategies pursued by the firm include collateralized loan obligations, CLOs, portfolio debt securities, and other opportunities across the credit universe. Currently, Eagle Point is the largest investor in CLO equity in the world and one of the largest non-bank lenders focused on providing financing solutions to credit funds. You can learn more about Eagle Point at eaglepointcredit.com. Our next guest is a freshman in college, but has already founded an industry group, Girls Who VC, to offer resources, content, and community to women interested in pursuing careers in venture capital. Find out why this was needed and the impact it is already having. I'm Ethan Devitt, and welcome to the 50 Faces podcast, a podcast committed to revealing the richness and diversity of the worlds of investment by focusing on people and their stories. I'm joined today by Isabel Amandis, who is a freshman at Harvard College and the founder of Girls Who VC, an industry affinity group which offers resources, content, and community to women interested in pursuing careers in venture capital. Welcome, Isabella. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here and speak to you.
Well, let's start with your background, because even though you're only a freshman in college, you've already had a little bit of experience in the investment arena. Can you tell us where you grew up, what you're studying today, and how you first became interested in finance and VC?
Yes, of course. So I grew up in New York City. I went to an all-girls school there, which I think definitely helped me building Girls Who VC, just generally being surrounded by an amazing community of young women for my whole life and seeing their potential. But I was always interested in tech, knew that was what I wanted to do, did a lot of coding programs in lower school, middle school, and even high school, realized that I really enjoyed that, but wasn't what I wanted to do. Long term, I was really involved with Girls Who Code and loved that community. And I felt like that was something that I was missing in a lot of different aspects of my life. So being able to have a community of women that were passionate about a similar career path to me was something that I found super inspiring. So I was looking towards different fields that interested me and decided to pursue entrepreneurship, worked at a couple of different startups, really love those experiences and just getting to work with founders, started reaching out to more founders just to talk to them, learn about what they were building. And that was just something that I always really enjoyed. I would say I was never super passionate or interested while I was younger in the finance aspect of it, more just talking to these founders and learning about their business plan, their business models, what they saw the future to look like with their new company that they were building. And then started learning more about the field and realized that it was something that interested me. I had a really close friend who was a part of the dorm room fund. And so she was doing venture capital. She talked to me about the field and through that, learned more about it and wanted to explore it further.
And before we move to talk about Girls Who VC, I understand you're also involved in some student-led investing activity there at Harvard.
Yeah, so when I got to campus, I knew that I wanted to pursue venture capital and explore that more since it was hard to do that in high school. So I stuck more on the entrepreneurship and working at startup side. But when I wanted to turn to more of the investing side, I got to campus and joined the venture capital group, which is an undergraduate club where we source startups and then pass it over to our partner firms. And then I also joined the MBA fund, which is a fund comprised of business school students at Harvard, Stanford, and Wharton. And there we're actually able to do the investing rather than just like sourcing and passing it over to someone else. So getting to invest in these companies, meet with these founders, and actually be able to provide them support and see really from the beginning, from the sourcing process to the diligence process to sitting in the investment committees, I was able to learn a lot more about venture capital by being able to apply what I learned by researching online to really hands-on work in the field.
And can you paint a picture of what a college campus like Harvard is like these days in terms of student-led entrepreneurship? Is it the idea that there's people cranking out startups, you know, in the dorm room after class. Are you seeing a lot of that level of activity?
I definitely think there's a lot more at Harvard than I thought there would be. Originally, I wanted to go to a school like Stanford because I thought that Stanford was really like one of the only schools where people were interested in entrepreneurship. Coming to Harvard, I had pretty low expectations of the entrepreneurial spirit. But getting here, I realized that that actually wasn't the case. And through different organizations sponsored by the school, like the Innovation Labs, I think there's much bigger of a presence here. I definitely have a lot of friends that are working on startups, working on companies after classes. I have a couple friends that already sold startups, which is really crazy. But it's definitely more of a thing than I thought it was. And there definitely are more people here that want to go the more traditional route of working in banking or consulting. But there still is a pretty decent presence of entrepreneurship. There are quite a few clubs and organizations. I think there's much less on the side of people wanting to go into venture capital rather than to go and build their own company. So that was something that I was trying to navigate when I got here. But I think over time, and especially with me building Girls Who VC, I've been connected with more people that want to go the VC route.
And let's move now to Girls Who VC. So what was the problem that you think this was designed to solve?
When I was younger and in Girls Who Code, I really loved having a community of women that were interested in the same thing as me and could go to them when I had questions or needed advice. So when I was interested in venture capital, I was trying to find a community, honestly, selfishly for me, of just people that I could rely on. And I couldn't find that, one, at Harvard, and then two, I turned to online communities. And there are quite a few communities online for women that are already working in venture capital. Like All Raise is probably like the biggest, most popular one, which is amazing. And then there are also other communities that aren't women specific, like Gen Z VCs is great, founded by Megan Lois, but I wanted a community of women like me who wanted to go into venture capital, and I couldn't find it. I found most of the resources that I was looking for online were geared towards people that already had finance backgrounds. So working in banking, working in different fields, and looking to transition into VC, rather than people that wanted to explore VC further and learn about that. And I also realized that there were so many different opportunities for college students to dip their toes into VC through sourcing programs or different ways to do it. But there was a gap between someone saying, oh, I want to explore VC, and actually learning about it so that you can get to that point where you're applying to these programs. So that was something that I wanted to fix. And I was just reaching out to women in the field, trying to gain their advice and mentorship. And I had access to that through investors, startup founders that I knew, or through different ways, or the Harvard Alumni Network, or just reaching out to people randomly through mutual connections. But I realized that that was something that I had access to, but not something that was available to the public. So that was the main motive behind me starting Girls Who VC.
Of course, the whole concept of social capital has garnered so much importance recently. I can see how certain individuals may have more social capital than others. And this is certainly, I think, a great step towards equalizing some of that access, which is so important. I'd love to hear what kind of response you received in terms of students' level of interest. Can you chart us through a little bit of your growth story so far?
Yeah, of course. So I started Girls Who VC December 6th. And when I say started, literally all I had was a website called girlswhovc.com. And on the website, it had a logo that said Girls Who VC and then an interest form. And that was me starting it. That was all I had. It was like the night before my final. I didn't really have anything. And I posted it on my LinkedIn and said, hi, I'm Isabella. I started Girls Who VC. Fill out this form if you're interested. And I got so many people that filled out the form, reached out to me saying that this was exactly what they needed, asking what I was offering, how they could help, how they could support me. And I was like, oh my goodness, I have nothing. Like, you are literally looking at all that I have. So I went and started creating material. I'm really passionate about education, so wanted to focus on educational material as the first thing I was offering, then built a Slack channel community, started to grow, started to post more on my LinkedIn. I'd say that's the number one way that we've grown. Then I met my partner, Amanda, who is now our COO, and a couple other people that joined the team. Now we're at over, I think last time I checked, 1,200 members, and just growing the community, working on all the content we're producing, social media, podcasts, newsletter, blog posts, and then events that we do, our Slack channel community, mentorship, and opportunities. So just trying to provide as much as we can to the people in our community and be able to support them and give them a safe space to facilitate their journey into venture capital.
Maybe you can give those of us from a different generation a window maybe into the engagement channels, because I'm actually a little surprised to hear that LinkedIn is so well used among younger women or younger professionals, I suppose. I thought it might be TikTok or something a little more avant-garde. So what have you found to be perhaps the most impact in terms of your awareness building?
Yeah, definitely LinkedIn, which I also was very surprised about. I thought that Twitter and Instagram would be like the most popular ways. So I told myself that I would never get a Twitter, but I succumbed to peer pressure and got a Twitter for Girls VC and then myself personally. But I think the reason for LinkedIn, at least for me personally, is I like to keep things like separate. So I feel like people go to LinkedIn when they're looking for help with their jobs or recruiting or just generally like themselves in their career building. So I think that's why we've found a lot of people on LinkedIn, but also because on LinkedIn, whenever you like a post, that post shows up for every one of your followers. So by the founders that I knew and were connected to on LinkedIn, by them liking my post, that showed up on their whole networks to their college friends and everyone. So I think that was the biggest way that we were able to spread. But I think you'd be surprised by the amount of younger people that are on LinkedIn. I think especially when you get to college, it's like a rite of passage where most people are creating LinkedIns and starting their job application process and having to submit links to their LinkedIn and generally all of that. So it's definitely been the biggest way that we've been able to grow.
And in terms of the content, what have you delivered so far and what's on the horizon for the next part? Because as I said, you certainly come a long way from that placeholder website. It's a great, clean, great functionality website. And the content, there's jargon busting in there. There's kind of soup to nuts descriptions as to how maybe certain areas of VC work. What have you found to have, I suppose, the most response in terms of content?
Yeah, I think with the content, I wanted to create short forms of content because our attention spans are just getting shorter and shorter. So just easy to digest, easy to read ways that really break down venture capital in an easy to understand way. So through our social media posts like Instagram and Twitter, those are every weekday, we just post really short things like, what is the definition of private equity was one of our recent posts, or here's a female founder, here's a female venture capitalist to check out, just really short ways to keep people engaged and educated. And then on our blog posts, we go a little bit more into depth on topics, but still keeping them pretty like short, succinct. Like what is the term sheet for VC, how to pitch to a VC, what apps to download, really like basic things that I think are often overlooked. And it's not that this information doesn't exist online. It's all there. We're doing the research. We're not experts in venture capital, but I think all the information that's out there is in a confusing way and really long forms of content. So we're able to bring that in an easy to understand way, but also things that are relevant to people that are trying to learn more about VC and not just people with lots of experience that know what these terms mean.
Well, certainly if the low attention span is a theme, curating content, making the friction low and accessibility high, it's got to be a better way to get information where it needs to go. I'd love to talk about the diversity in the industry, because clearly you saw a gap there in terms of a social capital, a network that you wanted to create. There are plenty of statistics about the low number of female VCs that there are, about the low amount of funding that goes to female founders. And so it continues. What would be your assessment from your vantage point of the diversity of the industry? And when you listen to the experts that you bring in to speak to your community, do you think it's this cause for hope? Is it getting better?
Well, firstly, to answer your last question, I do think there's hope. Something that is often talked about in the VC industry is how 2-3% of venture capital funding goes towards women. And I feel like this is a statistic that is often shared and something that people know we need to improve, whether or not it's improving. It's not, it's getting lower with time actually. But something that I felt was not talked about was the percentage of female venture capitalists. And I actually found way fewer articles and statistics on that. So on our website, one of the first things we have is that 9% of venture capitalists are women, 8% of firm partners, and 7% of board seats at firms. So this number is obviously really low. And it's been proven that one, women are more likely to invest in women, and two, women-led startups perform better than other ones. So there really is no excuse for us to not be investing in these women. And the way to do that is to put more women into venture capital. So to me, it kind of made sense to create something like this to get more young women into it. And it's not just saying that older people need to get into venture capital. It's really something that, in my opinion, we need to address as early as possible to even tell young women that venture capital is a field that they can pursue just up there, like with being a doctor, or being a surgeon, or being anything you want to be. A venture capitalist is another job. And I felt like when I got to college and I told my friends that I was interested in venture capital, a lot of the guys were like, oh, that's super cool. And a lot of the women told me, I don't know what that is. Like, what are you talking about? So even with little things like that, I noticed the discrepancies between genders and what career paths they even know are available to them, not even what they're interested in. And there's so many people that I think if they did know this was a field, they would be interested in it. So hopefully one of my goals with Girls to VC is just to give girls that option of this is a path. And obviously not everyone is interested in venture capital and not everyone is going to pursue this, but at least knowing that it is an option is something that I hope to give to people.
Absolutely. Wonderful. Well, I suppose the lot of a founder and a venture capitalist is some hits and some misses. As you started this, have you come across any setbacks or maybe something that you tried that didn't work out or that you thought would have traction that didn't?
Yeah, there are definitely a couple of different things. A lot of, especially community building, is trial and error. As soon as I created it and was thinking about the forms of content that I wanted to create, one of the number one things that I thought of was a podcast, just because I feel like that's something that a lot of people are doing now. It makes sense. I wanted to be able to speak to women in the field. So I thought a podcast would make sense. And then decided to speak to my community, bring that up to them. A lot of them said that they would rather do live events on Zoom and have them be webinars so that they could come to that and really like hear from them virtually, but like live, and be able to ask them questions. So I decided to do that. So up until a couple of weeks ago, we were doing biweekly events on Zoom where we'd have a woman in BC come and speak about a different topic, and then it would be open to questions. And that worked really well for the beginning because I think we were over winter break, so people had more time. It was the start of Girls to BC, so more people were interested. There was more engagement, but then over time, there was less engagement. So went back to my team, brainstormed how to improve, and we decided to go back to the podcast idea. So now we're doing that, which I think is working much better. I've gotten a lot of positive feedback. So being able to adjust to the community and one, listen to what the community is saying, but then be able to adapt to that and assess for yourself, is this really working? And maybe people say that this is what they want, but then also seeing, are they really receiving that? And are they really taking advantage of it? Or is there a different way that can have a bigger impact?
Yes, the ultimate product market fit, you know, inquiry, it needs to be done at every level. We talked about social capital, and an important part of social capital will be mentors, sponsors, or just inspirational role models that you can bring to your community, but also that you have yourself. Was there any key person, either to do with Girls of BC or otherwise, that has featured in your life so far that you can mention here?
Yeah, I have had so many mentors in my life. I feel like I could fill up like a whole book of just like names of people that have mentored me and helped me. But I would say a couple of names. So before Girls to BC, when I was in high school, Audrey Wish was the founder of a startup I worked for, Curious Cardinals. And she is a huge inspiration to me being a female founder, teaching me about VC and just generally entrepreneurship. So she is always a huge inspiration to me. I reached out to a couple different founders. One was Adam Alpert, and we did weekly meetings my senior year of high school where he talked to me about what it meant to be a founder. And just the fact that he would do something like that is just so crazy to me, that he would take that much time out of his busy schedule. So he's one person that I'm so grateful for. But then since starting Girls Who VC, I've met so many amazing women who have really inspired me. And the really cool thing about the podcast is that I'm able to have literally all of them come and speak and share their wisdom that they've shared with me. But a couple people are Ina Halilu, Melissa Gallagher, Abigail Reese, Catherine Byron, Jacques Philippe, Tyra Ruff, Jenny Lawton. There's so many people. I like literally can't even say all of them, but so many amazing women that have inspired me. And yeah, I'm super excited that they're all coming on the podcast. So some of them have come out, some of them are coming out soon. So yes, just so grateful for all of the women.
Well, happy to support a fellow podcaster. So let us know and we'll be sure to provide some links in our show notes here. And my last question is around any key words of wisdom that you've maybe heard from some of these mentors or picked up elsewhere, any creed or motto that you live by?
Yeah, I think there are a couple. So one motto or idea that propelled Girls Who VC was that I got the advice to, instead of planning something, just launch it, because otherwise you're going to miss your chance. So that was my inspiration with Girls Who VC, to just launch rather than doing the planning beforehand. So I'm really grateful for that. But advice for entering VC specifically, since that's something that I talk to a lot of the women about, because that's most of the interest from our community, is to really do some self-reflection and think about what are you bringing to the table that's unique. And you can be a college student, you can be a high school student and have something unique that you're bringing to the table that nobody else is. That's not an indication of experience or age or anything, but being able to figure out what makes you unique and then apply that to honestly whatever industry you're applying to, not just venture capital, is something that I've heard from a lot of women that I really try to live by.
Well, Isabella, the future is indeed bright when I see an organization like this in such its infancy, but already making such an impact. And I think what's most extraordinary is that you started at a place that most people only come to later in their careers, which is at the importance of the network, the social capital, the importance of the team alongside, but it's sometimes more important than the individual. And the gift that you're giving to a whole generation of young women is truly extraordinary. So thank you for coming here, for sharing your insights, sharing a little bit about the story so far. We look forward to seeing the organization soar.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I love speaking with you today.
I'm Ethan David. Thank you for listening to the 50 Faces podcast. If you liked what you heard and would like to tune in to hear more inspiring investors and their personal journeys, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, and all views are personal and should not be attributed to the organizations and affiliations of the host or any guest.